Hey everyone, welcome to the Racing Writers Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Crandall. Episode 191 this week is with Steve Laletta, the president of 2311 Racing, the now official president of the company. Steve had been working with them basically since Denny Hamlin announced he was starting a race team, but that interim title has now been stripped away, and he is officially team president of that company, and they have a lot going on. So really excited to catch up with Steve today. We're going to talk about all of that. We're going to talk not just about being a first-year race team, but everything they have going on off the racetrack, from scholarships to, as Steve said, they are a race team, but really it's a brand that also goes racing. He shares some great insight into what that means, and again, insight into just getting this team off the ground, what it's like starting a race team from scratch, the little things you don't even think about, such as getting technology, getting the IT department set up, getting clothing for the race team, getting into the race shop. They are leasing a race shop this year. They are in the old Germain Racing building. And eventually, they will have their own race shop. That's in the process of being built and laid out, but again, there's so much that goes into getting a race team off the ground, and Steve takes us into all of that, as well as sharing some background into who he is. As you know, here on the podcast, I like to know how people got to where they are, what their story is. Steve's been a racing veteran. He's been around for quite a while. He spent, I think, 10 plus years at Chip Ganassi Racing. He left the sport in 2018, and he'll describe how he wanted to go out and do something different, basically just broaden his horizons and try something different, started his own company, and then Denny Hamlin came calling, and he'll explain what drew him back into NASCAR. So we cover a lot of ground with Steve today, a fantastic conversation, and here it is right now. Here is Steve Laletta on the Racing Writers Podcast. First off, Steve, congratulations. The interim title is now taken away. You are officially, I guess, well, you already were, but official team president of 2311 Racing. Congratulations. How's that feel?
It's great. Yeah, I think once you get to closing in on a year, interim doesn't seem to be the right fit any longer since I'm still here and we're still plugging away. But yeah, excited. Obviously, there was a lot of work in a short amount of time to get this team ready to race this season. So what my title was and all that stuff was not really top of mind. It was more just getting to work. And I think we've done a decent job in that and can look up a little bit here as we get ready for 2022 and seem like the right time to get rid of the interim word.
Yeah, I want to touch on all the work that went into getting to this point. But first off, it seems like there is just something always going on at 2311. And I mean that in a good way, because whether it's on-track stuff or building towards next year, scholarships, diversity, whatever, there's just a lot connected to the race team. So how is it just in general working for a team that, again, just has so much going on? It's very busy, but in a good way. There's a lot of good headlines around this company.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, that's what made me want to jump in and come. You know, when I left Chip Ganassi Racing, I never intended to work for another race team. And then when Denny called and, you know, I kind of heard the vision of what him and Michael wanted to do, you know, not only on the track to build a powerful multi-car team competition wise, but also off the track. And, you know, really putting the time and effort and the partners around making a difference. And that, to me, trying to leave the sport in a better place was really what seemed to be the real opportunity here. And so we try to be different. That's the only thing you can in this space. We all know we go to the same place and all race each other every week. So the points of difference that a team has in order to deliver a brand that has an impact as well as a story to partners that they can take advantage of, I think is the real fun part of building this from the ground up.
Yeah. And you said there, I mean, you weren't looking to do anything else. You were away from racing. But the fact that somebody like a Denny Hamlin or a Michael Jordan reaches out and wants you to be involved in something like this had to, first off, been pretty flattering and kind of right away has to draw you in to want to come help when you get a phone call like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly to do something, like I said, from the very beginning. I mean, literally, announce the team and sign Bubba. And then it was like, help, you know, like we need to build this. And so I was really, I mean, one of the chances of that happening in today's world and then doing it for the ownership group that I'm getting to do it for and with was just something that made it really appealing. And, you know, it's been a blast. I was away for a little over three years. And to come back in, there was a little bit of, oh, is it going to be exactly the same as it was? And it wasn't. I mean, it was just, I kind of had a clear head and way different challenges because it was all new, you know, a one car team versus what I was doing with Chip's team and NASCAR and IndyCar and sports cars. It just was a whole different opportunity and something that so far has been definitely a challenge, but really fun to be part of.
Yeah, that's interesting. When you step away for even just a year, and as you said, it was what, about 3 years? I think it was 2018 that you announced you were leaving Chip. Like you said, it has to feel weird to just come back and try to get reacclimated to everything. Because I don't know how closely you were probably following the sport or if you completely got away from it, but just to come back in, right? And just reacclimate to the sport and the people in the garage. And as you said, then it's a whole new challenge with a brand new race team.
Yeah, I watched every race I could watch on, you know, television while I was not going to the track, whether it was Formula One or IndyCar, sports cars, NASCAR. I watched it all, but I stayed 100% away from the business of it. Didn't go to any races. And then, you know, to come back in, I tell people this a lot, like a lot has changed, right? There was a lot of momentum in the sport, some new races, some new markets, what Bubba was doing and what the sport was doing from a change perspective last summer. There was a lot of interesting new things going on. And then on the other side, still the same. Like I went to Austin, was my first race where I actually went into the garage. And, you know, I told everybody it's been 3.5 years. It was Vegas, March of 2018, that I was last in the garage. And they were like, wow, really? And I go, let me tell you something, still the same. So there was that comfort level from that perspective, but with next gen car coming and, you know, bringing new partners into this team and, you know, building it from literally employee number one and things like, you know, insurance and having to have IT and desks and things like, literally we had nothing. It doesn't come around, like I said, very often to jump in and try to do it. And oh, by that way, in 4.5 months, right? It was like early October when I started working on this and we had to be ready for Daytona. So there was definitely some hurdles to get over.
It's funny you say, you know, about IT and insurance. I remember Wheels talking about how, yeah, I mean, they were doing their first few meetings, I think, out of his garage at home. So I wanted you to touch more on what do people not think about, or what do we not realize goes into building a race team from scratch? Because as you said, when you got the phone call, it was okay, help, because it was very late last year. Daytona's right around the corner and you're building a race team. Everybody there's building a race team literally from the bottom up. So if you can touch more on just those little details that people probably wouldn't even think about that you have to handle to get this team ready to get to Daytona.
Well, like anything, it starts with the people, right? You couldn't do it without quickly identifying, you know, the core group of folks that are going to just buckle down and get it done. Like there was no choice but to get it done. So Mike Wheeler, you know, coming on board on the competition side and Denny's help, and then ultimately bringing on, you know, some people on the business side, whether that's, you know, from a controller standpoint, partnership management, there was a ton of contracts to be done. And then they're getting parts and pieces. We got our Joe Gibbs Alliance done and our Toyota TRD deal, like those sort of building blocks. You know, we called the five partners that we brought on in DoorDash, McDonald's, Columbia, Root, and Dr. Pepper, kind of our founding partners. I told them, you're the foundation that this team is going to be built upon. And it was true. Like I tell people a lot, like everything we do is for the first time, at least right now. And so that lets you take some risks and take some chances. But everything, again, from every bit of insurance and human resource systems and handbooks and making sure you've got all the back end pieces of accounting and HR and inventory control and then travel. Like it just, I had a spreadsheet of thousands of lines of things that were just ticked off the best that we could. And I always said, we're going to forget something. 100% we'll forget something. I just hope it's not anything major that we're going to forget when we're standing there in Daytona.
Yeah. Again, I just remember when Wheels spoke to us during Speed Weeks of just describing just that thrash and rush to get to Daytona, get cars in the shop, get paint on the walls, probably, and clothing. 100%. Yeah. Team
clothing, team uniforms. Clothing. Craig Robinson, who's our head of partnership management, started in December 1st. And one of the first things was car designs and clothing and our deal with Columbia and our uniforms. We were at the track in fire suits. And it was probably middle of January where he called me up one night and he was like, I'm buried with this. Like, is there any way I could make this easier, this whole process? And I said, Craig, there is a way you're going to make it easier. You're going to start in August for 2022. But right now, the only thing we can't get more of is time. And so we just have to grin and bear it and buckle down and get it done. And somehow he did and we did. And, you know, we got to Daytona and Michael and Denny and Bubba had their sit down interview with Michael Strahan for Fox. And we had a great, you know, qualifying race and we were all there and the noise we were making was so strong. And I just kept telling everybody, our goal was to get here. Like it's great that we're running well. And after this, it's going to be a grind of a first team trying to go week in and week out. But our goal was getting here and we're here and we look like a professional race team and we're ready to go. So I was pretty happy that we just got that accomplished.
Yeah. So when you come in, Steve, obviously you have experience in whether it was at Chip or you've been involved. I think you were at Miller Coors at one point. You've done many different things throughout your career. So when you came in and again, got that phone call and said, hey, can you help? In what ways do you think you were helpful? What do you think you brought over to 2311 that could help them get this going?
Well, I mean, certainly the experience of all the different ways I've been involved in sports marketing and in particular motorsports as a sponsor at Miller, as an agency representative for other clients on the team side. So I had a lot of perspective to bring to this team. For Denny has a full-time job, right? He's the driver of the 11 for Joe Gibbs Racing. So he can't spend every minute of every day thinking about this team. And I could, right? And so I think that was beneficial. And Michael Jordan and Curtis Polk and the whole Jordan team who have the Hornets and other business interests, they couldn't spend every minute of every day. And I could. So I think the time and the experience, look, when I got into this in October and we started working on all the things we need to work on, there really wasn't anybody that I had to talk to that I didn't know, you know, and luckily I think I've had good relationships within the sport for a while. And so it was easy for me to kind of come back in. There was a little bit of a comfort level, I hope, with people. And I think it shortened the time frame of some of the things that had to get done in a already ridiculously short time frame. And so I think that was hopefully beneficial.
We're in September now, so I'm hoping things are settled in now. Everything's calm. Like you said, you made it to Daytona. Did it start to calm down after that?
Well, it did start to calm down until it was, you know, March, April, and my focus went to, can we get to be a second car next year? You know, so like, as you know, it's always something, you know, you're never just looking right here from a business standpoint, you need to look farther out. So yeah, I was really happy that we got the news of Monster Energy coming on board and Kurt Busch coming on board announced in early September, late August. Like that's way ahead of where we were the last time. And so now we have not a ton of time to prepare, but way more time to prepare than we had. So I think that was very helpful. But now you go through it all over again, right? Mm-hmm. Doubling or almost doubling in terms of people and equipment. And, you know, we've got new partners to bring on board. And while we're doing that, we're taking the current partners that we have on the 23 and planning for next year. So it never lets up. This was a very, very fast year. When I say I started this in early October and now it's early September, it's like, where did it go? Like it was like a flash.
Yeah. Yeah. In less than 1 year, it went from being one team to now getting ready to add, like you said, a second one, bringing in new partners. You're going to have to staff a second team and go through all of that. But a year later, as you said, you're in a much better place to do that. So where is the company? Let's focus on one car. Right now, you've got one car on the racetrack. You've already locked down the news of the second one. So where is the company just at this point right now? Is it in a good place as far as, again, everything's settled in? Now you have game plans going forward. You have your partners on board. Everybody is, like I said, I guess yeah, the I word I, is I, just settled in, right?
Yeah, I think I would say we're into more of a rhythm of processes, of what needs to happen when, of communicating with each other and making sure the right people know about, you know, there's a familiarity of now all of us working together, people that joined the organization that didn't live in Charlotte now live in Charlotte. We're able to be in the office because when we started, we were all pretty much virtual. So there's a, you know, throw in 4.5 months to plan for a race team within a global pandemic, right? There's another little wrinkle that we've all been dealing with, and we continue to deal with the ebbs and, you know, unfortunate spikes of it. So yeah, I feel like we're in a better rhythm right now. We still have a ton of work to do. We still have a lot of progress we need to make on the track, off the track. That's going to be seasons and seasons of work, and we'll always be wanting to reach for that next goal and continue to improve. But I feel like we've got a pretty good flow going of what we're trying to do. And then we're going to disrupt that to a certain extent because we're going to add a whole nother group into the mix and a whole nother car. And, you know, but again, it's all meant to get to where the 2311 brand wants to be, which is a strong race winning, championship contending, multi-car team that's also making a difference off the racetrack.
Yeah. And another thing I just thought of that will probably be thrown in the mix at some point, and I don't know how much you want or can talk about it, but eventually the plan is to have a whole new race shop because you guys are right now, what, leasing or renting the one that you're in. So now correct. You have to throw that into the mix too. Eventually you'll have to move race yeah. shops and start all over again.
Yeah. And that's been one that, you know, during the initial, call it, you know, 5-6 months of getting this thing up and running, whenever Danny and, you know, people wanted to talk about the new race shop, I was like, I'm out. Like, I don't want to talk about it. I can't talk about it. I'll join in when the time is right. But like, there's so much to do. Denny loves the design aspect and he's come up with some great plans. You know, we have a piece of land that will be a fantastic place to build a new race shop that will fit today's NASCAR world with next gen cars and what we need it to be. That probably will still be a couple of years away, year and a half to 2 years away, because that's how long it will take to get it ready once we put shovels in the ground. But yeah, that's something that will be staring at us at some point down the road.
Right. I want to move away from the race team here for a few things and we'll circle it back. But I wanted to, as I said, kind of bring up a little bit about who you are and why Denny and everybody said you were the guy to go to. Because as I said, you've been in the sport before. It was, what, 11 years, I think, with Chip over at Chip Ganassi Racing. Your time over there, I'm sure there's many stories and many things that you could talk about or stand out. But are there certain ones that come to mind, Steve, of maybe lessons learned or your time there that really prepared you for, I guess, this next chapter or even when you left and you started your own company? What was it about those 11 years at Ganassi that kind of stand out or stuck with you?
Yeah. And look, I met Chip when I was working at a group of agencies called the Radiate Group when I left Miller. We just happened to go to dinner together and, you know, like anybody in the garage, you know, we kind of waved to people, but you don't really know them. And we went to dinner and we started talking and we were talking about, I'd been around it for a long time since my Miller days. You know, we sponsored Penske Racing. So I knew Rusty Wallace and Roger. And then we talked about, we sponsored Don Prudhomme. I knew Don Prudhomme. And these were friends and people that Chip knew. And he was like, hey, you know a lot about this sport. You could maybe help me. And I was like, sure, I'm happy to help you. And so I started just kind of giving him some advice. And at that point, I went from a big corporation in Miller, where I was a piece of this giant machine. And then these agencies, there were 9 of them around the world. And I was just trying to counsel them. And I was ready to run something. And Chip was nice enough to say, hey, I need somebody to come in here and run my business, because it's always been him. his name's on the door, right? And I said, look, if you want me to help you and run the business, I'd love to do it. I'm the right guy if I make 10 decisions every day, week, or a month, and you agree with 9.5 of them. And the one that you don't, we'll talk it out. And at the end of the day, it's your company. We'll go how you want to go, and I'll be the one doing that. And I spent 10.5 years with him and probably could count on, you know, one hand or less the times where we had to have those tough conversations. He knew the racing business way better than me because he was a driver, and I know enough to be dangerous, but nobody wants me figuring out how to race a car or set it up or make a pit call. Like, that's just not me. And I was okay with that. And Chip was okay with me working on the sponsors and maximizing that and the staff and how we approached it, coming up with ideas like Sound Garage when we had concerts in the race shop. And he's like, what are we doing? And I was like, just wait, here's why we're doing it. And then he would be like, wow, like that was great. So letting us take risks, like I think that was the biggest thing, that he was always on the forefront of things and he let us do that. And I always tried from my Miller days on to be pushing the envelope and being innovative. And so I got to do that in a team environment at the same time, you know, winning in multiple Indy 500s and going to Le Mans and winning that race and the Daytona 500, like having all those great experiences. And so I learned a ton there on how to, you know, just kind of hopefully be successful running any kind of business. And then, you know, just the grind of, I would come back to the race shop when there would be a NASCAR weekend off. And so how was your weekend off? Like, I was in Long Beach. You know, like there just wasn't a stopping point because we had so much stuff going on, and I just need to get away from it. And when I got away from it, I thought I was always going to be away from it. And here I sit.
Yeah. So you started again, that was 2018, and you started Pigeon Sports Marketing. Was that again, just one of those things where, as you just said, you wanted to get away from it, but you also were able to, I would guess, kind of just broaden your work experience and do something different because you had been in racing for so long.
Yeah. And, you know, when I was at Miller, I did deals with Jerry Jones at the Cowboys and NBA teams and music and product placement in movie. Like it was a lot of different sports. And yes, we did motorsports. And all of a sudden, I spent 10.5 years in this one sport. And when I announced in March of 2018, I was leaving, my plan literally was to do nothing for sure for the end of that year. And then maybe even longer, just because I felt like I was in a pretty good spot to just clear my head. And I just, when the announcement went out, I had friends from the industry just start calling me, hey, if you're not doing anything, could you help me with this? And all of a sudden I was in Milwaukee with the Brewers, helping them with some of their sponsorship strategy. And another friend of mine called, and he was working at the ownership group of the Columbus Crew that was moving to Austin, Texas. And he's like, I could really use some help, you know, in Austin building how we go to market and what we're selling. I was like, that sounds like fun. There's some MLS stuff. Then I get a call from a friend of mine who introduced me to a co-founder of Epic Game, who I had no idea who they were or what Fortnite was. And now I've been working with Epic Games on partnerships for that title of Fortnite for Rocket League. I did a, you know, deal with the NBA with them and Formula One and NASCAR for Rocket League. And so I started working with friends and people that I really liked and doing fun projects, and then got the call about would I work with Denny on his ownership aspirations. So the first, you know, several weeks were just behind the scenes at night talking to him, going, well, let's think about this, we should call this guy. And then when he landed it with Michael, it was like, okay, can you help? And I was like, absolutely, like this sounds like it will be a fun time.
Yeah. So what happened to the marketing company then when you committed to Denny?
It's still Pigeon Sports Marketing will continue to exist. I spent 3.5 years building it. It's really just me, right? So I will have less time to help people, but I will continue to offer to those friends of mine that, you know, need advice or want to pick my brain of 30 years in this business. I'm more than happy to help them.
Right. Something interesting, Steve, I came across in my research, and that was how playing tennis and growing up at a country club seemed to really impact you and carry over into how you do business. Is that accurate?
Yeah, well, I taught tennis at a country club. I didn't grow up at one. I worked at one.
Right.
So, yeah, I played growing up. And actually, the guy that was my tennis pro got sick and he couldn't run around the court any longer. And so he said to me, would I hit the balls and run around the court? Well, he stood off the side and gave the instruction. And so I started doing that when I was 14. And you know, it grew into then ultimately me giving my own lessons. And then I became the head pro at this country club in Ohio when I was 18 years old. And, you know, when you're 18 years old and you're given lessons to every age group, men, women, kids that you can think of, it really teaches you how to listen and communicate and change your approach based on, you know, somebody's ability to understand or how they react to an instruction here or there. And it just, I felt like it started to build my kind of consensus skills, which I feel like if you ask anybody, I have an opinion about anything and everything, but I try to make sure that everybody gets their say to try to convince, you know, the group or me or whoever it might be, you know, why we should make a certain decision or do a certain thing. And that for me started back at Winding Hollow Country Club in Ohio by trying to teach people how to play tennis when they were twice my age, maybe more. And they're looking like, what are you going to teach me? And you got to make sure that they realize you've got confidence, you know what you're talking about, all those things. You know, you're sitting across the table negotiating multi-millions of dollars deals with the commissioner of the NFL or Jerry Jones, you better feel like you know what you're doing. Or Chip Ganassi, Roger Penske, like those things really teach you quickly how to get things done.
Yeah. I think it was a Sports Business Journal interview that I came across, and again, mentioning research, because something else that stood out was you mentioned that you thought you were going to be a judge and go to law school. That didn't work out. So it's quite the shift to go from thinking you're going to be a judge to into sports. How in the world did that happen?
Yeah. I always thought I wanted to be an attorney and then ultimately be a judge to just sit there and tell people, no, yes. You have to leave, you know, anything like that, just controlling everything until I went to Notre Dame and I made it through my first semester. And I went home and I said to my parents over dinner, if I make it through 4 years at this school, I'm never going to school again, ever. So there went law school. I never got my MBA. I shut it down because it was so, I tell people all the time, the hardest thing I've ever done was graduate from there because I was over my head academically. It was really, really hard. And then, you know, I taught tennis, as I said, and when I was a senior at Notre Dame, I had four job offers out of school. I turned them all down. I went and taught tennis for the summer because I would literally from Memorial Day to Labor Day make twice as much money as the job offers were for the whole year. I was like, why would I do that? Well, ultimately, I realized I didn't want to teach tennis my whole life. I didn't want to be, you know, 55 years old hitting tennis balls to people. So I had to get a real job. And when I did that, I moved to Atlanta and I got a job with Red Roof Inns. And my hope was that at that time they were sponsored Bobby Rahal and IndyCars. And I thought, well, maybe I could work on that program. That'd be cool. And ultimately, that didn't work out. And I found a company that I looked up sports marketing in the phone book. At the time, there was a phone book in Atlanta. And I got somebody to have lunch with me and I started working for free. And one thing led to another. I thought sports was an interesting career opportunity. No idea that it would play out. And now, like I said, it's been almost 30 years of being in this business and couldn't have thought of anything better to do.
Right. So really no rhyme or reason behind it. But I will say it sounds like it has taken you all over the country. You've already mentioned Atlanta and helping out in Milwaukee. I mean, how many states would you say you've hit probably just doing different jobs over the years?
Pretty much all of them. I mean, Miller, when I was at Miller, I was the regional marketing director for the whole western part of the United States. So yeah, I've been in a lot of travel. That was another thing. Again, travel all through my Miller days, agency, 10 and a half years with Chip. When I got to 2018, I was like, I'm stopping. I just need to get my life together, get healthy, you know, just stop from the insanity. And then COVID hits and everybody had to do that. So I think I was a little ahead of it from that standpoint. I wasn't forced to do it. like everybody else, but it certainly gives you a different perspective when you can just, you know, take a breath. And my work perspective, even now, is entirely different. I think I've been to 7 races this year, maybe 8. And at this point in my old world, I would have been to however many there are between NASCAR, IndyCar. You know, maybe I missed 2 or 3 throughout a season, 2 or 3 weekends. Now I'm just going to have a different approach to it. And hopefully that approach works for 2311.
Right. Just tie it all together for me and how you got to NASCAR. You said a little bit earlier about how you met Chip and getting involved with him, but just getting to NASCAR, eventually becoming a part of his executive team over there.
Yeah. I mean, again, when I was at Miller, I started with Miller's sports marketing agency, and that's when I lived in Atlanta. And at that point, let's say there were 27 NASCAR races and 24 of them were in the Southeast. So we touched all of them and we drove from Atlanta basically to every race, North Wilkesboro and Darlington and Charlotte and wherever you could go. And so I was just around it and I really enjoyed it. We had a great relationship with Rusty Wallace. He won a ton of races. Miller Genuine Draft was all over the place as a new brand. And so we sponsored Bobby Rahal and IndyCar Racing. So all of a sudden I wind up managing the Miller IndyCar program when I thought back in my Red Roof Inn days, I was going to manage Bobby Rahal's program. Well, here's Bobby Rahal sitting there. And it was just like those weird things that happen. And, you know, just kind of, I think when you're working at a race team, and this is what, you know, Chip and I talk about a lot, where 70 to 80% of your revenue is corporate sponsorships, wouldn't somebody that spent $150 million a year in corporate sponsorships maybe bring a perspective that could be helpful in that? And that's kind of like I always rely back on when I was spending those kind of dollars and how I sold them in and what I looked for. Is how I look at it when I'm trying to find, you know, McDonald's and DoorDash and Columbia and Dr. Pepper and Root Insurance to want to come be part of 2311. Like, I feel like that perspective helps a little bit because I've sat on both sides.
Yeah, that's interesting to touch on because it does sound like for you, you're obviously very business mindset, business focused, whereas the racing is there, but there's other guys to worry about the racing. You're looking at things and your job is the business of racing or the business of what goes on in that race shop.
100%. And a lot of the business of what goes on impacts competition, right? Like all the money we spend is about how to make the car go faster, and finance is on the business side. And most of the people that work here, 30 people that work here, 25 of them, 26 of them work on the competition side. Human resources is on the business side. So there's this influence there. But again, knowing limitations, you know, if I go in and want to look at what our engineers are looking at to set the car up this weekend, I might as well look at a whole book of a language I can't understand because it's just not my thing. And we all know in racing, if you don't have the right business background from a sponsorship standpoint, there's no team, right? You know, we don't have the ability to rely on other sources of revenue. So that's what I love about, you know, even being around MLS and esports and all the things that we talked about earlier, there is no business as difficult and challenging as motorsports because the car behind me has got McDonald's on the hood and we're going to be that on our uniform. We don't have a big star on our uniform. We are the brand. And it's really, that's how we're identified. And that makes it for a guy like me, just unbelievably challenging and fun to stay ahead of everybody else.
Right. How would you explain for race fans who are curious, what does a team president do on a week to week or day to day basis?
I think, again, the big thing is making sure that you boil this business down to something pretty simple. And I say it all the time. You keep your partners that you have happy and try to grow them and find new partners. That's it. If anybody on the business side is doing something other than supporting those two things, good chance they're wasting their time because we've got to have a strong relationship with partners. We've got to impact their business in a positive way. You've got to run well enough that they are noticeable and they're with a winner and treat them really well, right? If you run great and don't treat your partners really well, you're not going to have any. And if you run not so great and treat them great, you're not going to have any. So you got to kind of do both, right? So that's where the competition piece comes in. It's just that it's something different every single day, whether it is the culture of the building and people and making sure the communication is where it needs to be, you know, little fires that need to be put out here and there because you didn't know something was going to happen. It's like any business, only we will know every Monday morning whether people are going to be in a good mood or not for the whole rest of the week.
So in looking at 2311 from a, you just touched on it, there's performance, there's the business. When you look at 2311 now, first year in, is this group, is this organization in a good spot? Is it, you know, are there things that you guys need to be doing better? Is it, again, for a first year team, where would you say you guys are from business and performance?
I think we need to be, we obviously have to be continue to improve across both. We're learning a lot together as a new team. We have to be more consistent. You know, like I think we've had some really strong runs that ended up in not strong finishes for one reason or another. People will say, well, what do you have to do? What thing do you have to do to continue to get those better finishes? And the answer is, it's not one thing. It's a million things, right? Like that's the part about this business. Same thing on the partner side. Like if we do something that's a great program for our partners, you know, like we talk about our scholarship program with Dr. Pepper, where we're going to give away $5,000 scholarships around the Las Vegas race. We think it's a great idea. It's a great program. They give away tremendous scholarships around their college football program. So their college football program, years and years of developing, sits here. We just started something here. You know, like, so we're going to build it to get to that same level, but it's certainly not there yet. The recognition of it, the, you know, how we get the right applicants, how we, you know, use those applicants for internships and all the things that will ultimately connect dots. Like, we're not anywhere near on a lot of our programs hitting on all cylinders. And I think the same if you talk to Wheels and Bubba and the competition side. It's like we've had some really good races, we've had some terrible races, and we've had some really good runs that might not have looked like we finished, you know, had really good runs. So there's always something. But I feel like, you know, my expectation personally was I was hoping we would be in a position to be close to being able to get a playoff spot, whether that's point our way in or win a race this year. And, you know, we weren't really close to pointing our way in. Of course, this year it was almost impossible to point your way in, right? Because there were so many different winners. So those are the uncontrollables we couldn't foresee. But I definitely feel like we have made a strong statement in our first year, both on and off the track. And it's something that we'll be able to easily build upon as opposed to thinking we got to start over.
Yeah. Is there anything that keeps you up at night?
No, with my new mindset that I talked about earlier, nothing keeps me up at night. Used to, a lot of things used to keep me up at night, but no, I mean, look, I think we have to always remember this is sports and motorsports is supposed to be fun. And if we I try to tell everybody here, if we have an issue on the business side, like, let's just fix it, right? Like, let's say we mess something up and we'll fix it. And we haven't done that very much, if at all. And our partners have always been understanding because they're doing things for the first time like we are. And everybody realizes that as we finish up this year and head into next year, we'll have less of that opportunity, which is fine. You know, that'll raise everybody's game. But no, I feel like we're in a really good position to add this second car, to take on this challenge of this next gen car, which we're all learning about together. Like I said, it's always something.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is always something. That's a good segue talking about mindset, because I wanted to bring up, you tweeted a lyric earlier this year from DMX, and I wanted to ask why it resonated with you. It was a lyric about everybody makes mistakes. A mistake is, I'm going to say, all right. I know that's not the lyric. Yeah, but yeah. I can't pull that off, Steve. So I wanted to ask why that resonated with you, and you're just talking about mindset there. So I guess it kind of ties in.
Yeah, it always has, you know, like I just feel like, as long as you acknowledge the mistake and learn from it, like I've told everybody since I started at Chip Ganassi Racing, my approach is very simple. When you do something with me or for this organization, I want you to think of every other way you could have done it. And if it brings you back to the way you were doing it, I'm okay with that. Where you're going to have a problem with me is if you do something out of habit and just keep doing it and never look at how can you do it any other way. That's where I'm going to come after and say, wait a minute, what's going on? Which is why I have this habit of hiring people that have no knowledge whatsoever about this sport or even motorsports. And I've had people say to me, well, I don't know anything about NASCAR. And I say, that's okay. There's 50 people out here that know NASCAR. I want somebody that comes in and goes, why do you do that? Like, that doesn't make any, like a fresh perspective that just asks the question of how come we're doing that? Or have you ever thought about doing this? Because if everybody knows it and they just, you get into this habit and you just keep doing it. And that's what, now that I've been around as long as I have, I tell everybody here, push me on. I don't want to say, well, this is how we used to do it, or this is how we've always done it, because I don't want to do it that way. I want to do it entirely different. And that's kind of the starting point.
Yeah. So again, that's another good segue. You're talking about bringing people in, because you had to do that a year ago for the first car. Now you're getting ready to do it for the second car, for the 45, when Kurt Busch comes over and Monster Energy. What do you look for in someone when you want to bring them into a company or an organization? What stands out that they might do or say or act that will put them maybe high on your list?
Yeah, I think part of what I just said, which is somebody that has a unique perspective, right? They're going to be able to look at a situation and come up with a solution that isn't the easiest, most natural thing to do, right? Because that's what everybody will do. And in this business, we have to differentiate ourselves as 2311 versus all the other teams in the garage versus all the other sports teams that are out there. That could go get McDonald's or Columbia as a sponsor. So I want to have people around me that really want to push the envelope of doing things that nobody's done before and that are kind of out there, or, you know, a core group of people will be like, what the heck? What are they doing that for? Like, that's the reaction that I like. It's like, what are you doing that for? Well, here's why. Oh, that makes a lot of sense. And we have so much opportunity to do that with social media and with our diversity, equity, inclusion platform and with these big brands that are with us and with Bubba and what he can do. And now bringing Kurt on and Denny, you know, we've got an ownership group that, you know, anybody would love to try to be affiliated with and figure out how to maximize. And all those things are what we need, people that will look and not just be like, hey, I've been in the sport for 10 years, or, hey, I love the sport. You know, somebody says to me, it's like, I don't care. Like I literally have said before, like, I don't like motorsports. And they go, you don't? And I go, well, no, I do. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not in it because this is my passion of always being in. If somebody would have told me, you know, in my Miller days, hey, you're going to run a race team, I'd be like, no, I'm not. Like, well, I'm not going to do that. But it just, stuff like that happens. And when you find out, you know, what the real challenges are, all of a sudden you're like, wow, like that is something to really sink your teeth into.
Right. Again, your passion is on the business side, but, and there's business in racing. It's not necessarily passionate about the racing per se.
Yeah. I mean, I'm passionate about it now, but like, right. You know, there's people that grow up around this sport. They're racers and yeah. They grow up around it. And that's what they know. And that's what they do. Just like people that grow up around the NFL and football or tennis. Like that's, I just never did that. You know, I went to the Indy 500 the 4 years I was at Notre Dame because my friends were from Indianapolis and they're like, yeah, it's a great party. And, you know, once I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. And those cars are fast and, You know, so I certainly respect and appreciate it now, but didn't grow up like a massive, you know, going to short tracks when I was growing up and watching racing all the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, the business is what really, like I tell people in sports marketing, they're trying to get into this, like, take your passion and leave it your passion. Because people go, I love baseball and I want to work with in baseball. And I'll say, don't do that. Leave baseball your passion, because if you go work for a baseball team, 2 or 3 years into going to 82 home games every year, you might not love baseball as much. So like, find something that's challenging for you as a business person and leave your passion over there as your passion.
That's interesting. That's an interesting way of looking at it. Two more things for you, Steve. You said earlier, use the words 2311 brand. So it seems to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that yeah, it's a race team, but it seems like it's more appropriate to say it's a brand that goes racing. Or am I wrong?
That's what we want it to be, 100%. And you'll see some stuff. We want to do some fashion collaborations, and the logo itself and the name of the team is different than... It's not Jordan Hamlin Racing. You know what I mean? It's something different. And I feel like we can build that brand from a media platform, content, take it into different places. You saw Denny and Bubba and Post Malone's video. You know, we took 2311 into that by having it on the car and on the uniform. Like, the influencers that have reached out to this team and the team has reached out to are vast and have a lot of power in terms of what they can do to help us for the sport, for our team. And so, you know, we're just getting started on building what 2311, the brand, will be. But I think you're 100% right. The goal is that it's a brand that is a race team, not a race team brand.
Right. And then again, as we wrap up here, which is, you mentioned the Dr. Pepper scholarships. I know you guys are big on trying to do a lot with your diversity in terms of hiring who people you're going to bring on to this race team. You just said there want to do maybe some clothing or things of that nature. So I guess, again, is that how 2311 is going to be different from everybody else? Because it's not, again, it's not so much what you're doing on the racetrack. It's a lot of what you're going to do off the racetrack.
Well, I hope we're the starting point of it. And then I hope the industry, you know, follows and we all do this stuff. I think Bubba did some great work along with Steve Phelps and everybody at NASCAR last year, you know, to make the sport feel more inclusive. And we need to continue to do that. And there's been some really strong indications that it wasn't just a one stop, you know, thing, a point in time, it is going to continue. How do we stay on that leading edge of bringing in new fans and, you know, using our reach and the brand that we're building to help on that process? How do we bring new people into this race team to see it as a place that they can build a career if they're not in it already? Well, you know, we want you to come try to be part of it. And we want to be that door. That's the first one you walk in to see if motorsports is a place that you can build a career, whether you're an engineer or a mechanic or a finance person or a social media person. Like this, we want to be that company that says, we want to talk to you. I hope you want to talk to us.
Yeah. Well, it certainly gives everybody a lot to look at. And again, to go from in 1 year, what you guys have built to now getting ready to expand it is pretty impressive. So Steve, I thank you for the time. I thank you for sharing insight into that. And yeah, thanks, just Kelly. Good, I appreciate it.
Absolutely. It was fun.
And there you have it. Now you should know everything you need to know about what is going on at 2311 Racing, who Steve is, and how to get a race team off the ground from scratch. Really, really enjoyed that conversation. Thank you so much to Steve for coming on the podcast, being interested in sharing all of that with us and sharing some about his background. Once again, I always enjoy learning about people. That's why I love to have this podcast, learning people's stories, how they do their jobs, how they got here. Steve is another one that has just a fascinating backstory. So thank you again to Steve. And thank you to Alicia Deal of 2311 for coordinating and making sure that we got it done. I hope you all enjoyed this episode. Please leave a rating and review. Hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already, or if you've been on the fence about doing so. Hopefully you are enjoying the conversations here on the Racing Writers Podcast. So hit that subscribe button. Leave a rating, leave a review. You can find me on social media if you want to engage with me about this episode or any that you may have heard recently in the archives. We've had some really great guests lately, and it's not that I'm tooting my own horn. It has nothing to do with me. We have had some fantastic conversations because I think that I've done, okay, to toot my horn a little bit, I think I've done a good job of picking out some interesting people this year. So really proud of the conversation we've had lately. Jordan Anderson, Chris Gale last week, how about that? How honest he was about going back to the Xfinity series. Doug Rice, Corey LaJoy, speaking of which, Corey LaJoy's kickball tournament is this week, so check that out if you are local. So yes, a lot of great conversations. Hope you're enjoying it. Let me know. Once again, find me on social media. My Twitter handle, @KellyCrandall. You can find me on Facebook. Search for that public page. That is where you will see the links for racer.com. That is where you will see the links to this podcast. You can also find me on Instagram, @KellyCrandall. And I know I don't say this a lot, but I hope you've bookmarked racer.com for all of your NASCAR needs and some NHRA stuff. I appreciate them letting me do that when I am able to. If you would like to have another way to support the podcast, please check out patreon.com. The link for that is in the show description of this episode. It's also all over social media. Or simply go to Google, go to your Google machine, and hit patreon.com/KellyCrandall. A lot of just companion stuff to the podcast, such as see my show notes, get a shout out on the podcast when you sign up for the first time. You have a chance to interact with me if you want to hang out on Zoom. You have a chance to be the first ones to know who the guests are on the podcast. I've been recording a lot of interviews lately, so I'm already set all through October. So if you want to know who the guests are, go to patreon.com. You also have the opportunity at one of the top tiers to offer questions to any upcoming guests, because I will tell you ahead of time who I am recording with. So the Patreon's another way for you all to support the podcast, support me, which I greatly appreciate. As you know, this is a tough business. I've put all of my own money into this to make this work, to get to the racetrack, and I appreciate you all being able to help me out now to do that. I'm excited to be at a lot of the upcoming races here to end the year. That is all through the support of you guys at Patreon. If you have signed up, Talladega, Charlotte's in my backyard, but Talladega, Martinsville, and heading to Phoenix for the championship weekend. I'm so excited. I did not get to go to Phoenix last year, not only because of the restrictions, but that's a tight one to make work. That's a financial pretty penny there, I guess you would say. But Patreon, you all have made that happen, so I'm excited to be back covering a championship race in person here at the end of the season. So again, leave me a rating, leave a review, hit the subscribe button, find me on social media, tell me what you think, or go to patreon.com and show your support that way. Also, one last thing before I let you go this week. If you would like to advertise on the podcast, if you have a business you would like to advertise on the podcast, hit me up. Slide into those messages. Let me know. We'll talk it out and we can figure something out to advertise on the podcast. I'm always looking for partners. I've worked with some great ones in the past, from Lionel to Xfinity to Carpies. Remember them? They did some great merchandise for the podcast. So everything and everyone is welcome. So if you want to advertise on the podcast, or you know someone who might want to advertise on the podcast, let me know. All right. So coming up next week, another brand new episode. Again, it's all brand new episodes. I'm not giving you old stuff here. Next week is Blake Harris. He is the car chief, not crew chief, car chief. We're going in another direction. Car chief for Martin Truex Jr. at Joe Gibbs Racing. Blake was another really awesome, insightful conversation on who he is, how he got here, and what it means to be a car chief. And I asked the one question that we all want to know. Why is it that the car chief gets thrown out when there's an inspection issue and not the crew chief? So that is coming next week right here on the Racing Writers Podcast.